This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So the NFL has its big week next week, but yesterday was interesting for the NBA. They had their captains for their All-Star game coming up. And on February 7th, LeBron James and Giannis Antetokounmpo are going to be picking their teams, at least the starters, the reserves come later, for the All-Star game. Now, this is going to be televised, and I think this is kind of a cool gimmick. Last hour we talked about, does the NFL Pro Bowl need a gimmick? We've seen gimmicks in other sports, not so much Major League Baseball. I think the All-Star game stays traditional. But nevertheless, we've seen the NHL change their format. The NBA has now gone to this picking teams type of thing. You try to have fun at an All-Star game. LeBron is going to be able to pick his team. Like Giannis will pick his team. Who's going to be picked first? Who's going to get picked last? Are feelings going to be hurt? It's going to be fun. I think it's going to be interesting. And I hope everybody of the 10, the other 8 people, I hope they all take this with a grain of salt for what it is, which is really fun. I hope when people tune in for it because they want to see it, that nobody's feelings are hurt. But I like the fact that the NBA adapts its All-Star game, right? It can get kind of old when it's West versus East and it's 153 to 151. Nobody plays defense. Nobody really wants to see defense. But when you do the same thing over and over again, people are like, eh, why bother? The NFL Pro Bowl still gets good enough numbers. It doesn't necessarily have to change, but I'd like to see it adapt to something. I think it would be kind of cool to have 4 teams play a kind of a tournament 7-on-7. I think the weekend should be more about skills competitions and things like that. Just give us something different. Give us something unique. This February 7th, when LeBron and Giannis pick their teams, it's not the end of the world. It's not the biggest sporting event of that weekend. Oh, actually it might be because it's February 7th, but it's going to be fun just to see it because it's different and unique. And if you're an NBA fan, it's kind of cool, right? But it's kind of the adaptable nature of sports. Start figuring out some different things you can do to make some stale games a little bit more exciting. Games people don't put a lot of value in and make them more interesting. Pro Bowl this weekend, it'll be the same kind of game. I hope eventually it kind of livens up a little bit because the NFL is big enough and important enough to have a little bit more fun in the Pro Bowl. Coming up, again, Super Bowl 53, but the Saints want answers.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to be broadcasting all next week in Atlanta, gearing up for the Patriots and the Rams. Roger Goodell still has not commented publicly on the non-pass interference call against the Saints in the NFC Championship game. And that has got Ben Watson very, very upset. Watson on Twitter made this comment. Commissioner Goodell, we all realize that football is an imperfect game played, coached, and officiated by imperfect people. What occurred last Sunday in New Orleans, though, was outside of that expected and accepted norm. Your continued silence on this matter is unbecoming of the position you hold, detrimental to the integrity of the game and disrespectful and dismissive to football fans everywhere. From our locker room to Park Avenue, accountability is what makes our game great. So lead by example. We are waiting. Okay, listen, there are two sides to this, and I can understand where Roger Goodell is coming from by not publicly speaking out, but I wish he would. I do understand the argument as to why he wouldn't. Starting about Tuesday, right, when you have media day and the players are there and the real Super Bowl hype starts to generate, right? The real Super Bowl machine starts kicking in. Roger Goodell does not want anything to disrupt the game that is going to be played on Sunday in terms of its credibility. We all saw the non-pass interference call, and we all assume that had that been called, the Saints would have done X, Y, and Z very simply, right? No real need to go outside the box. They probably would have ran down the clock as much as they possibly could, kicked the field goal, and won the game. It was tied at the time. They ended up kicking a field goal, but there was plenty of time on the clock for the Rams to get the other to get a field goal, and then it was they went into overtime. That being said, and the Saints would have been in the Super Bowl. That being said, if you're Roger Goodell, you don't want to put the integrity of the Super Bowl matchup in any sort of public doubt, like admitting that the matchup you have is really not the valid one. Now, people can believe that, and people can say that, and people can write about it, and people can talk about it, and people can do everything they want about it. It is different if it comes officially from the league. That's a different angle, right? So you can have the public, everybody in America going, you know, the Saints really should be in the Super Bowl. That's fine for the NFL. They may not like hearing that. That's fine for the NFL. They want to be careful publicly how they do this because they don't want to invalidate the Rams NFC Championship. They have to be careful, right? There's another side to the story. And I know Saint fans don't want to hear it, but the other side to the story is because the game is officiated imperfectly, the Rams did win the NFC Championship game and won it legitimately. Unless you can prove a conspiratorial nature to why that call wasn't made. Meaning the league was out to get the Saints to prevent them from going to the Super Bowl. And thus, the officials egregiously made that call with a purpose. And because nobody's making that claim, and nobody believes that claim, that this was just a stupid error by the officials, and a big one at that, and one that should not have been made, no question. Roger Goodell is in a tough spot because he doesn't want to publicly say to America, one of these two teams doesn't belong here. He doesn't want to imply that in any way, right? It's a PR strategy, but it is a legitimate one. Again, Ben Watson may not like it. You may not like it. I know I don't like it because I would like to hear him say something about it. He doesn't have to go on and say, you know, this is the end of the world. We're going to change everything. This really is a problem for, he doesn't have to go that big. I would like him to at least acknowledge that the officials made a big mistake here. But this is still part of the game and all sports have to deal with that as part of the game. As long as we are reluctant to embrace technology the way it's presented to us, technological advances brought this up earlier this week. Technological advances in baseball, for example, have made it so that a home plate umpire does not have to call balls and strikes anymore. He can just relay what a computer upstairs is going to tell him what that pitch was. He can be at the plate for close plays. He can be at the plate to keep the order, make sure people bat in order and all that stuff. Looking at you, Mets. But there still is a reason he's there. But he doesn't have to call balls and strikes. There's computer technology that will do that for him. He can just be down there in an earpiece going, ball two. Because the computer will have the strike zone, the location, trajectory, everything that you need. Is it expensive? Yeah, but the technology is there. Same thing here. There is a way to use replay that may be different than the way we use it now. There's a way to evaluate plays with an eye in the sky that we can utilize now. We're not embracing this like we should, and there's a reason for it. There is a cost. It's expensive. I get it. But there is a reason why we're not embracing this technology. If Goodell wants to make a comment on that and the future of the game, so be it. He's going to address this. I guarantee you, he's going to address this when the media has their turn with him and sort of that state of the league address that he does. He'll be asked this a number of times. He'll be asked about where this is going, where the league is going with this. But I think Ben Watson is calling out what we all want, which is just the league to say, yeah, mistake. And you know what? It's a mistake that doesn't mean anything. The Rams are still the NFC Championship. And that's fine. But at least admit there's a mistake. Because Ben Watson points out something in his tweet that rational NFL fans know. Every one of us has had a major moment in our lives where our team has suffered because of a bad call. Every one of us. It stinks and we hate it, but we all share. Maybe not as much as some others. A Cleveland Browns fan, for example, probably doesn't have the same pain of thinking about blown calls than a Saints fan does. Or maybe he does. Maybe in the 80s, one of those games against the Broncos, there was a call that wasn't made, or there was a call that was made that was not right, that blew a chance or blew the chance for the Browns to beat the Broncos in the Super Bowl. Whatever. But we all have that moment. It's an imperfect game coached by and officiated by imperfect people. That's a great line. That's an absolutely great line. Because that's a rational thought. He's not saying, hey, Commissioner Goodell, what do you have against us? Why did you orchestrate the officials to call the game against us? Why did you conspire to keep us out of the Super Bowl? He's not making that charge. This is a rational argument to the commissioner. I get it. People make mistakes. But you know what? This was so egregious. I need you to explain it to me. You have a receiver getting plowed over before the ball is there. And it was easy to see. What is the league stand on this? Where is the league? Where do they see this? How do they see this? But if you're Roger Goodell, and I'm not completely siding with him because I want him to make a public statement. I understand he's got a big week coming up. This is a big deal. This is not only a big event for the country, for a lot. This is a game broadcast around the world, right? It's a celebration of this sport that no other sport in this country gets. Okay? 112 million people will watch this, whatever those final numbers are. He can't invalidate the Rams. He cannot even hint that the Rams' participation in this game is tainted, even if we all believe it. Because again, it goes, you know, it just goes to the acknowledgement. And then what happens with that? It's like if a company makes a mistake and the CEO says that, boy, every lawyer is like ready to, they got what they wanted, right? If the company admits, like if an airline loses all your luggage, right? You're like, and the company goes, yeah, we made a computer error. That was on our, that's us, right? Every lawyer is like, finally, we got the admission. Now we can use this in lawsuits. That's not going to happen here, but it's still enough for Goodell to go public relations-wise. I can't do that to the Rams. I can't do that to Stan Kroenke. I can't do that to Sean McVay and his team. I can't hint to the American public that I know what they know is accurate. That the Rams don't belong here because that call should have been made, and likely the Saints would have gone to the Super Bowl. He can't do it. But I certainly would like him to say something. I just don't know what. But it feels... Sometimes silence is the loudest thing you can hear, right? Sometimes when somebody doesn't say anything, it's the loudest thing because it means more.
Yeah, right? For him to say face, just come out and say something real quick.
Say something real quick. Don't get deep into it. Say something. Just,
you know, I mean,
we're looking into officiating down the road, right? Or something along those lines.
You know, I mean, just come out and say, yes, there was a mistake made. Human error. And we're going to look to how we can change this in the future.
I wonder if Ben Watson would like an answer as to why you didn't make a phone call using this Rule 17 now that we're all kind of getting familiar with. I got to be honest with you. I've been around this league a long time. I didn't know there was a rule that allowed Goodell to make a phone call to go, I'm on the plane, or I'm in my office, or I'm in Kansas City, and change that. That happen.
Hey, I'm in the same boat. I was unaware that there was a bat phone.
Right? I didn't either. You imagine being in New Orleans at the time. You're ready. Like, you know how... Like with challenge flags, right? They want to get the playoff before a challenge flag is thrown,
exactly.
Right? Like that, I guess that doesn't play into that factor here, right? Like Goodell, whenever Goodell makes a call and goes, replay it from that spot, everything else is nullified.
I mean, how quickly does he have to make that call? Too?
That's a great point.
By the phone? I mean, is it one of those phones that just has a button?
Gee, I thought being commissioner was going to be easy. All right, 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. Would you like to hear from the commissioner on this? Or do you think he needs to keep his mouth shut until after the Super Bowl? You can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver with your thoughts on that. It's Tony D and Ron Culver on SB Nation Radio.
Listening to SB Nation AM, on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, on SB Nation Radio. Again, all next week in Atlanta. Looking forward to going to Atlanta. Should I go to the Coca-Cola Museum if I have time?
I don't know.
That's right up the road from the stadium.
Yeah.
Do I want to do the history of Coke?
Have you ever been? Well, anyone wants to do the history of Coke.
Right.
Which Coke are you talking about?
Now, I do remember that I went to a smaller version of this in Las Vegas, and they had like soda from around the world.
Hmm.
And I thought that would be kind of cool.
Well, does Coca-Cola do that?
What do you mean, Coca? Different brands, like pineapple soda, that they sell in Papua New Guinea or something like that.
All right, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they got to reach out.
It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, right? Maybe they got a tasting room.
Yeah, that would be neat.
If you go to a brewery, you get to go to a tasting room. Maybe I don't know. Well, the only time I was in Atlanta was in 2000, and
that was a long time ago.
It was. I'm sure it's changed a lot since then. But we skipped the Coca-Cola Museum. We were outside. We took a. There's a. If I remember correctly, there was a gigantic bottle that my wife and I took a photo in front of, but that was...
Yeah, it's in Olympic Park, right? It's in the big park?
Well, I think it's outside. Unless they moved it. I mean, it has been since... It has been 19 years.
Right. But that whole park area is where the Olympic Park used to be in 96.
Right.
But I think that's where the...
Isn't that more towards the stadium?
Yeah, that's right near the stadium. That's what I was saying. I'm going to be staying down in that area, and the Coca-Cola Museum is in walking distance from where I'm staying. Like, if I have free time, I could go there and take a look at the sights of Olympic Park in Georgia.
What I remember was, first of all, they do have a subway system, and it runs, it looks like a big cross.
Okay,
that's what I remember. You can either go east to west, north to south. I also remember that there are a lot of stores closed on Sunday because I remember I needed to get something, and then I went there on a Sunday and nothing was open.
I better make sure I have everything.
Yes. If you're lacking a toothbrush, good luck finding something open in Atlanta.
Excellent. When your battery loses its power, you lose your ability to get around and get things done. So when it's time to replace your battery, trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the SuperStart battery that's the exact fit for your vehicle. Whether it's reliable economy, hardworking premium, or powerful extreme, O'Reilly Auto Parts has the SuperStart battery you need at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. So this bit of video that was played from the Pro Bowl practices and skills fun is really funny, but at the same time serious. I guess Jamal Adams of the Jets tackled the Patriots mascot and reportedly, quote unquote, sent the mascot guy to the hospital. Are we buying that he went to the hospital, or did the league go, hey, man, go get yourself checked out of the hospital just to make sure we don't need any problems coming down later? Like, we don't need you to wake up tomorrow with a stiff neck or bad back. Like, just go get yourself checked out.
Yeah, because we need Patriot mascot to perform on
Yes.
Sunday.
Yes. Jamal Adams thought he was having fun. He sent the kid to the hospital. He heard the Patriot mascot was walking around the Pro Bowl and fans were booing, and Adams decided to have some fun, and he went to and he tackled him, like, without gear on, just jumped on top of him, tackled the Patriots. The funny thing about that video is Adams is going to get celebration from other players, and one of the other mascots comes running over to see if he's okay.
I think a larger question here is, what is Patriot mascot doing at the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't he have a big game to prepare for next week?
He has another job that he needs to be ready for. He shouldn't be dancing around the Pro Bowl with the other mascots that have nothing else to do next week.
Yeah, I found that very shocking.
Yes. Don't go raining in. Like, somebody should have told him, no, you don't belong here. Like, this is the Pro Bowl. This is for non-conference champions.
You don't get to play here.
No, you don't get to go here. What's the matter with you? That's like going to a restaurant. This is only for poor people. No. Like, you rich, you can't be in here eating. No.
You can't order off the value menu.
That's right. No, you can't. Get out of here.
Real quick, is it sad that this will be the hardest hit, the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, it really will be. I think it's the hardest hit since Sean Taylor laid out that one guy who I can't remember now.
Yeah,
who
he's
laid out, but yeah, it's probably the hardest hit since then.
Good for Jamal Adams. They're trying to have some fun. So it didn't go right. Big deal. He was having fun.
Yeah.
Patriot mascot was there. He's a Jet. People were booing. It's pretty cool.
I'm going to throw out a teaser. You ready for the teaser?
Yeah, I'm ready for the teaser.
I believe Jamal Adams will be on this network next week.
Oh, cool.
So we can,
that would be great.
We can get to the bottom of it. I mean, did he send...
I'll talk to him about him the whole time.
Did he send mascot flowers to the hospital?
That's right. Did he send him flowers?
I mean, you know, like the magician type flowers that you pull out of your sleeve and like, oh, I got a, look at this, dozen roses.
Yeah.
Did he send those? Because I believe that's how mascots act, are using fake props, right?
Yep. I agree. Do you think this kid's hurt? Like, I don't want to make light of it.
I mean, maybe.
Isn't there a lot of padding in those outfits?
I think there is a lot. Well, see, I don't know, because he's
maybe not.
He's not like the big fluffy mascot. Like, if this was Philly Fanatic, I wouldn't think anything of him. Like, dude, you're not hurt. Get up.
No, get up. You're in a big puffy foam green beast.
Yeah, but he is. You know, I got to look at it again. I think it's just his normal body with an oversized head.
That might be true. That might be true.
And Jamal Adams is a big guy.
Yeah, Adams said he was running around and everybody was booing him. So he said, "You know what? Let me go tackle him." That seems an appropriate thing to do. I think that's fine. I didn't hit him hard, man. All jokes aside, I didn't hit him that hard. I don't know what was really going on, but they did tell me he was in the hospital. My intention was never to hurt him. It was all about just a joke, but I definitely want to check on him and make sure everything is good. Yep. At the end of the day, we're all out here just having fun. It wasn't nothing intentional to try to hurt the guy. I think I agree with him. I think it's fun. I think it's cool. Guy's in a costume. You're just tackling him. Be neat. You're probably thinking he's not hurt. You're probably thinking whatever outfit he's in, it's going to, you know, buffer the fall a little bit. It's all good.
And I don't want to get mascot hate on me, but I kind of think that maybe mascots are soft.
Maybe so. Well, the people inside, like, yeah. Maybe, you know. Are they more, I don't know. What does it take to be a mascot? Because I remember when I worked in minor league basketball, the guy that we had in our costume, he was like he could do flips and stuff like that. He was really like more gymnastics oriented than strong or anything like that. Cause we, you know, he was in a light costume, allowed him to do fun stuff. But I'm watching the video again. The Jaguar from Jacksonville comes running over to see if he's okay.
I'm sure there's like a YouTube video somewhere where you can see mascot training.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
But I guarantee it'll be a spoof.
Right. Right. No kidding.
I really don't know. I mean, I imagine they have to be in shape because they do a lot of running. They do a lot of jumping and dancing. I mean, But to be honest with you, I don't really know NFL mascots. They're never really shown on TV, right?
Yeah, there was a couple of years ago that they did. They had a thing. It was like in the 80s. They had a thing called Huddle. Like it was like some sort of, I don't know. It was the same kind of face, but he was in whatever identified the team. So he had this face and it was similar to every team, but he dressed up as a cowboy or he was a steel worker or he was a Patriot or he was a jet. He was an actual plane. Like that was their, then they kind of got away from that. And now they've got these mascots, but I don't know what, other than hanging out near the goal line on field goals, I don't really see him do anything. Like they don't do like NBA mascots, like hit three, you know, half court shots at halftime and whatnot. Like, they're just walking around.
The Phoenix Suns mascot puts on a little performance and does flips to dunk. And I mean, would you have maybe the mascot should start taking field goals at halftime? I don't know what he can do.
I went to a lot of Bronco games in my 10 years in Denver, and Miles just hung around the sidelines, didn't do anything. Like
takes pictures,
I don't think,
right? Walks up in the stands and grabs a kid.
So that being said, and I don't mean to disparage anybody who does NFL mascot work, I don't think it's one of those massively athletic jobs where it's more like being a character at Disney World.
Exactly.
That's
what it is.
Right. Like rather than like in the NBA, I'm sure in the NBA, they're like, you need to dance. You need to run around with that suit. I need you to do some backflips. I need you to be able to jump on a trampoline. I need you to be able to hit a half court shot. Like all of these things where you got to have some skills to be an NBA mascot because you're going to be performing. I think an NFL mascot is get in this suit, walk around and make people laugh and have fun. And so who knows who's underneath that outfit when Jamal Adams tackled him? Like who knows what size and puffiness he actually is in terms of his strength.
And all they do is they make appearances around town.
That's it. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, have some fun with kids and whatnot.
I hope we don't get mascot hate on
this. I know we are. We know we are. Super Bowl rewind on this date in Super Bowl history, three of them, including one team twice. That's next. SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Colbert, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. It's time for Super Bowl Rewind, where we give you a little bit of going back in memory lane to the best Super Bowls, or the Super Bowls that were played on this date. There were three of them here on January 25th that were played. The first one, one of the first earliest Super Bowls I do really remember, and that was Super Bowl 15 between the Oakland Raiders and the Philadelphia Eagles. It was played on this date in January of 1981, and it was played at the Louisiana Superdome. And one of the things about this Super Bowl was Jim Plunkett played for the Raiders, and Ron Jaworski, who you see on TV, was the quarterback of the Eagles for this Super Bowl. The Eagles got there, and it was always kind of cool because I remember as a kid thinking this was kind of neat. The Eagles got there beating the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC Championship game. And they did so by wearing their road white jerseys because they knew that Dallas was a little superstitious in wearing the blue. Dallas never wore the blue. Like, they wore their road whites at home and they wore their road whites on the road. And the Eagles made them wear the home blue in their game, in the NFC title game. That was kind of neat. You know, I don't know if they had any effect at all in the game, but nevertheless, at least they thought so. The Raiders won this Super Bowl. And there was a yellow ribbon that was on the side of the Superdome because there was the Iran hostage crisis that were going on. There were yellow ribbons to bring them home, and they ended up, you know, coming home pretty quickly after that. But those are the couple of things I remember about that Super Bowl. And it was the Oakland Raiders. They would then move to Los Angeles. Plunkett would also win another Super Bowl with them when they were with the LA Raiders. But it was a pretty interesting, pretty good Super Bowl. Like, I was a kid, and I remember it was kind of entertaining. Even though it was 27-10, I thought it was, you know, still pretty entertaining between two teams. It wasn't the Steelers, which I had kind of wanted, but it was nevertheless Oakland versus Philadelphia. Now, you had to go all the way to 1980, so a couple of years later in 1986, for the next anniversary. And on this date in 1987, I should say, January of 87, the Giants played the Broncos. And the Broncos were making their first Super Bowl appearance with John Elway at quarterback. They had gone before with Craig Morton, but this time they were going in with John Elway, the young gun quarterback. Now, the Giants, Phil Sims of the Giants, it's still a remarkable performance, was nearly perfect in that Super Bowl. He was fantastic. And the Giants won their first Super Bowl championship. Bill Parcells, the head coach, Bill Belichick was on the defensive side. And they dominated the Broncos in Super Bowl 21. It was also the first Super Bowl where Phil Simms said, I'm going to Disney World. You hear it all the time now. I think he said Disneyland at the time. I'm not sure. But that was the first one. Simms was paid money for that. But it was over 100,000 people at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. And if you're a New York Giants fan, this is the memory, right? This is the memory. They've won Super Bowls, two Super Bowls. Eli Manning had the great Super Bowl. Jeff Hostiller is a backup with their defense, shut down the Bills. But this is the Super Bowl. This is the one you remember. A just utter domination of the Broncos. They win 39-20, and it wasn't even that close. Giants scored 17 points in the third quarter, and Sims was magnificent. Absolutely brilliant. Nearly perfect. He was 22 of 25 with three touchdown passes and no interceptions. At just one of the best Super Bowl performances you'll see with a quarterback. Elway threw for 304 yards with a touchdown and a pick. But little did we know, much like Super Bowl 19, where we thought, because we saw a young Dan Marino in the Super Bowl, we thought we would see Dan Marino in that position time and time again. We never saw him again. Elway would go back to the Super Bowl, but we had no idea that the next two that he would go to would be disasters as well, setting him up for got to get one for John in his late 30s when they beat the Green Bay Packers in Super Bowl 32, which, Ron, by the way, happened on this date in 1998. So Denver, the anniversary of one of their worst Super Bowl losses, gets the same celebration for their Super Bowl win over the Green Bay Packers. And I know many of you don't remember that Super Bowl. Some of you do. I cannot begin to tell you how much the Packers were favored in that Super Bowl. It was crazy. The Broncos got there on the road. They beat the Steelers in the AFC title game. Green Bay was a juggernaut team then. Really, really good. Favre was Favre, and the Packers were great. And in 1998, the Broncos were a huge underdog. But a historic Super Bowl nonetheless, Super Bowl 32, because it ended the NFC drought. You've heard us talk about this in bringing up these past Super Bowls. The NFC owned the Super Bowl from 1985, when the 49ers beat the Dolphins in Super Bowl 19, until Super Bowl 31, when the Packers beat New England. After that, Denver won the next two Super Bowls. That is a long drought. You know how bad it was? It was so bad, there was a legitimate conversation, not just fans screaming, legitimate conversations by media members to get the NFL to make it a seeding tournament. So there was no conferences. So it was seeded, because the better game was the NFC title game. So Cowboys versus the Niners, or the Niners versus the Packers, or the Bears versus the Giants, or the Giants versus whoever, it didn't matter. That game throughout all the 80s and into the 90s, that game had more significance and more entertainment value than anything the AFC was putting on the biggest stage of the league. And John Elway winning his first Super Bowl. Like I said, you go back to 1980, January of 97, when he lost. All right, Elway will be back. He's really good. He's a game-changing quarterback. He should be back in this game. All right, didn't make it this time, but there'll be plenty of more opportunities. No, he went to the Super Bowl the next year, lost to the Redskins. 2 years later, lost to the 49ers. And then there was a gap where we didn't see him in the game again until Super Bowl 32. A good span of 7 years between the last Super Bowl and the one he finally did, 8 years maybe. And it was a good chunk of time. And the Broncos were considered kind of a, you know, Super Bowl laughingstock. They were the Bills before the Bills. And then on this date in Super Bowl 32, the Broncos won the Super Bowl. The Packers let Terrell Davis score so they could get Favre the ball back, and he couldn't get it. And to this day, covering the team for 10 years, when I got to Denver, it was kind of on the tail end of those Super Bowls. It was like about a year or two later after those Super Bowls. And it was just the Dave Logan, who's the play-by-play voice of the Broncos, his call at the end, just, Broncos are going to win the Super Bowl. Like, it was, he knew what that meant. He knew all, it wasn't just a team winning a championship. It was a team winning a championship and erasing a really bad history, exercising the demons of the past, because the Broncos were ready to go 0-4. They were not only that, but Elway was ready to go 0-5. Oh, they were 0-5. They were ready to go 0-5, and Elway would have gone 0-4.
Yep.
And that was something they just didn't want to see, especially at his age. You just didn't want to see it. The team got there on the road. They were road warriors through the postseason, and they got to the Super Bowl. And you knew, like, there wasn't very many people that were picking Denver, maybe outside of that region. The Packers were really, really strong and a strong favorite. It was a double-digit point favorite in that Super Bowl. I remember listening to a local Tampa radio, and a guy said he was putting like a boatload of money on the Packers just to win straight up. He was taking the money line, so he was laying out a lot of money to win. And he told the host it was guaranteed money, and the host was an older guy, and he said, I've been around this game a long time. I know one thing is no guaranteed money in this league. And he was right. I always think about that poor guy who put a lot of money on just the Packers to win. Didn't have to cover, didn't have to do anything. Just the Packers to win the game outright. And the Broncos were Super Bowl champs. And they did it again the year later. So on this date, three Super Bowls, Super Bowl 15, Super Bowl 21, and Super Bowl 32.
Now, the one thing about the Packers, Super Bowl 32, that sticks out in my mind, I was in San Diego at the time.
Yep.
And I remember there's a couple of touristy places to go in San Diego, and one of them had a hat shop. And outside the hat shop, you could get every type of cheesehead hat.
Oh, God, that's great.
But you walk around. I mean, it's a huge touristy place that lots of people go to. You couldn't find anything Broncos. But you could find almost everything Packers.
Those Packer fans, man, they travel great.
They travel great, or they're just, you know, they're...
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. They're in cities. It's, you know, they're almost like a bug inside the cities.
Yeah.
So wherever you go, the Packer fan will be there.
Yeah, and rightfully so. I mean, they were the team that year. In doing my research, the Super Bowl 21, the Giants and the Broncos, first Disney reference by an MVP, that was Phil Simms, but it also was the first time that a national audience saw a Gatorade bath. Like, it had gone on before, but we hadn't, like, most people hadn't seen it, and this was the big Gatorade shower that they gave Parcells. So there was Phil McConkey. I remember him. He was like the cheerleader for the for the Giants. He was like their wide receiver. And I remember like Parcells told him to run out of the locker room waving the towel. Just wave the towel to get the fans riled up. I mean, for Giant fans, this was, you know, for New York Giants, I mean, they were had been the, like in the 50s, right? But going to that Super Bowl was awesome. Just an awesome experience for the town. And they were riled up and, you know, he wanted the Giant fans in that section of the Rose Bowl to be loud and crazy. So pretty cool that we got three Super Bowls on this date. So in both of them, and two of them involved the Broncos in one of their lower moments and one of the highest moments in franchise history.
Yep.
So, all right, 800-777-2907. We'll be keeping you up to date on these Super Bowls throughout the anniversaries all next week, too, when we have a Super Bowl coverage down in Atlanta. 800-777-2907. One other MVP candidate from the coaching staffs of both teams I want to talk about coming up next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
You know, one of the things that we talk about when it comes to breaking down the analysis of the Super Bowl, any matchup, you know, we talk about head coaches, obviously, and quarterbacks, obviously, and the star players on defense or wide receiver or whoever it is. But when you look at the assistant coaches, you look at the guys that are orchestrating the offense and orchestrating the defense, I think in this Super Bowl, there's going to be a lot of that conversation, and should be a lot of that conversation. For as much as we talk about Sean McVay and the youthfulness of his mind and how you know, he looks at offenses and tries to get as many variations as he can. That's basically McVay's strength, is that he'll take, you know, standard offensive setups and whatnot and then throw a lot of wrinkles into it. But also, as I talked about Dante Scarnecchia yesterday, in terms of I think there's an MVP coach on that sideline that has done a magnificent job that needs to be acknowledged. And if he can do the same thing with the Patriots offensive line, if they've done so far in this playoff, keep Brady upright, don't let him get touched, don't let him get sacked, anything like that, can keep Aaron Donald and Donovan Sue and everybody away from Brady. If that offensive line can do that, Dante Scarnecchia is kind of the sub-MVP of that Super Bowl. Brady's strength is the fact that if you don't pressure him, he'll dice you up. That comes from the offensive line. On the flip side of that, going in the other direction and looking at the Rams, one of their MVPs on the coaching staff of Sean McVay, I think, is Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips has been around this league a long time, son of Bum Phillips, and has great defensive is a great defensive approach. Right. And again, he's going to have to devise a way to that's the only way you get to Brady is you've got to get pressure and you got to get it up the middle. You can't get it from the sides. You have to get it up the middle. He's got to devise a way to do that. And if he can't do that, he's got to come up with a scheme to sort of limit Brady's options in terms of throwing the football. And he's got to be ready with a defense that will be able to close the run game, because the Patriots will run it down your throat if you give them an opportunity to do that. They don't care at where the yards come from. They're not. You know, they're not a run team, pass team. They're a whatever works team. And I think Phillips being, you know, Belichick talked about this this week about how much respect he has for Wade Phillips, the longevity that he has in this league, which doesn't usually allow for longevity in terms of situation. You better be adaptable. And he says what he liked about Wade Phillips is he hasn't gone crazy with what he does. He just takes what he does and does it really well, utilizing the star players that he has in Denver with Von Miller and that defense. Really was able to have a top of the line defense, has got one with the Rams as well. I think taking a look, going a little deeper into the coaching staff, makes watching this Super Bowl a little interesting. When you're looking, it's not just, hey, Belichick, the old man, against Sean McVay, the young guy. Well, what about Wade Phillips going up against Josh McDaniels from just a coordinator to coordinator position, right? Or like I mentioned, Dante Scarnecchia and his offensive line, making sure the one thing you need to do with Brady is available for Brady, which is I don't get hurt, I don't get touched, and I can do my thing. I can go through my progressions and I can look down the field and figure out where I want to go. Or I know with the offensive line, I've got more options at the line of scrimmage based on the defenses I see. I think the chess match of football, we often talk about that, but I don't want to overlook it in this Super Bowl just on the basis of young guy versus old guy in McVay versus Belichick. I think there's so many good angles here. I think Josh McDaniels, for example, is worth every cent of the $4 million that the Patriots pay him. Right? I mean, listen, as far as coordinators go, you may not like McDaniels, and I'm not a huge fan from a personality perspective, but I got a ton of respect for what he does with offenses. Really, really smart guy. Same with Wade Phillips. And if this is a defensive football game, if the Rams defense makes its presence known, like we saw with the Giants in their two Super Bowls against Brady, if the Rams defense is what we're talking about, carry Wade Phillips off the field, man. And like, just do it like Buddy Ryan did with the Bears. Let the defense know, like, let everybody know that Wade Phillips, as long as he's been in this league, in a really, really long time, he's been in the league, I think, longer than Sean McVay's been alive in various capacities. Let people know that Wade Phillips is orchestrating yet another championship defense like he did with Denver. And on the flip side, I hope that there is enough credit that's going to go to a guy like Dante Scarnecchia even more than what we're seeing about that offensive line, because that has been a real key to the Patriots' run. They all know it, and now you're starting to see the attention. For a guy that's 70 years old, been with the Patriots since the early 90s, right? He puts out a product every single year, man. Every single year that offensive line does its job with Tom Brady at the key moments that they need to do it. And this playoffs has been no exception. So look at the coaching staffs. Look at the guys underneath the guys. And you'll see some really good matchups for Super Bowl 53.